fun and feeling groovy.
Oh, good morning, Reading. This is Dr. Trudy Pratt, and you're listening to my show, Positively Healthy, here on KCNR 1460. Well, gosh, in the studio today, we've got a whole room full of people, and it's already super fun. Our first guest up is Robert Eckelberger, and he brought his mom today, Shannon.
Good morning.
Good morning. And Robert is 7, and he's on a health kick, and we're so proud of him. And I want to give you a little background here because, you know, I want you to know how bold he is. Robert has given up a certain amount of soda pop, and he's given up a certain amount of dessert items. And he went on a health kick, how long ago now, would you say?
I'm thinking 8 months.
8 months, probably. Okay.
Maybe a little longer.
Yeah.
I've kind of lost track.
Yeah. And so, to give up some of these, I want to talk about the sweetener and diet soda for a second and high fructose corn syrup, because those are the sweeteners that are in a lot of soda pop, and they're both really addictive. So when you have some, you always want more. And so, for diet soda, a lot of people report that, they have headaches and they feel nauseated, they can't sleep, they have maybe numbness, their vision is off a little bit. They have memory problems, depression, hyperactivity, some stomach disorders, skin lesions. Sometimes people have anxiety attacks and ringing in the ears. And sometimes their taste buds change a little bit. And, aspartame, which is the sweetener in diet soda, it's the most reported by consumers as with problems. So people call in and they report to the FDA that they're reacting to the sweetener in diet soda. So when we think about diet soda, sometimes we have to stop and think, okay, do we just see a whole lot of commercials on TV? What made it so great? Is it because it was addictive? Why do we keep going back for more? And the same is true with high fructose corn syrup, and it's also in a lot of prepared foods. And so this is the number one source of calories in the United States. I mean, soda pop. So, this causes rapid obesity because it absorbs so fast into your bloodstream, your body can't even regulate your insulin, and it leads to everything from bone problems, cancer, heart disease, and, these are not forced upon you. These are things where you can just sort of decide with one decision that you can get rid of these products. And so Robert over here has decided that he might just have a little less of this stuff. Now, what brought that on? Do you know what made you think like that, Robert?
I just wanted to be healthier.
You wanted to be healthier? Were you feeling like you weren't that healthy, or you just knew that if you stopped drinking that stuff, you'd be healthier?
I just wanted to stop drinking it so I'd be healthier.
Now, Shannon, did he just go cold turkey, or?
Well, I was asking him that last night. I do remember him saying, I'm not eating junk food anymore. I'm done. And we were like, okay, good. We figured it'd be, until the next dessert. And he, just kept going. But he told me last night that he just started slowing down on it. And then he made a decision to just stop it.
Okay.
Except for at parties. And he will allow himself to have it on birthdays and special occasions.
So now that's when you're having soda or dessert or both? Or
yeah, he'll just have, if there's soda at the party, he'll have it. He'll have cake. Like last night we had a get-together, a party for my mother, and he had cake. And just let himself have what he wanted.
Because it was a party.
Yeah.
Okay. So then let's say it's just like your regular Monday or Tuesday. Would you have dessert on those days, Robert?
No.
Okay. And would you have soda on those days?
Sometimes.
Okay.
Like if we have taco night or something, we'll have soda. But generally, what do you usually have to drink with dinner and stuff?
Water.
Okay.
Ice milk.
Good. And then what are your desserts that you sometimes have? Your mom said you sometimes have fruit. Is that?
I usually have an apple or a banana.
Or yogurt, maybe.
Okay. And so when you have that, is that satisfying? Do you feel really good after you've had that?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's pretty exciting. Now, what about being outside? Your mom also told me that you're really not wanting to be an indoor boy. You're thinking of yourself more as an outdoor boy. What is it that you're doing outside?
I'm playing on my scooter. I can play in the dirt.
Oh, good. Okay. And then, do you play with friends outside, or?
Not usually.
Okay,
no,
so you're out.
We live kind of out.
Okay.
So he just goes out and plays in the dirt, plays with the dog. We're landscaping, so we've got dirt piles.
Good.
And so he'll just go out there and just get trash and feel good about himself.
Is it fun to be all dirty?
Yeah.
Oh, good. That's great. Hey, we're going to come back with a couple more questions for Robert, but we're going to take a break, and you're listening to Positively Healthy. We'll be right back.
Guest at District Fairground.
You want to last, just kicking down the cobblestones, looking for fun and feeling groovy.
Welcome back. Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt, and you're listening to Positively Healthy here on KCNR. You know, in the studio, we have Robert Eckelberger, and he is 7. And what grade are you in, Robert?
Fourth.
You're in fourth grade.
Yeah, first.
Okay. I was like, wow, fourth. Okay, he's in first grade over at Grant School. And he is on a health kick. And so he has mostly given up soda and mostly given up dessert unless it's sort of a special night of the week or it is somebody's birthday or a special
celebration
party.
Or
celebration.
Yeah.
Okay, now how was that when you first started? Was it easy right off or did you have to kind of get tough? Or what was it like when you started?
It was really hard.
Okay, so what? Everybody around you would be eating sweets and having soda pop and you would do what?
Not eat it.
Okay, and then you had to really get tough inside?
Yeah.
Okay. And then what was it like for you when he first started, Shannon?
Well, I had a lot of guilt because he was really working hard not to eat it. And he'd come home and we'd have brownies or something. And he loved them. He really wanted them, but he wouldn't eat them. So it was wonderful. I just didn't think it was going to really stick.
Yeah.
You know, I figured till the next dessert. But it just kept going and going, and I thought it was pretty awesome.
And then it got easier for you then, the more you said no?
Yeah.
Okay, so then that's encouraging for anyone listening, you know. If the more somebody says no thank you to something, the more you kind of get tougher inside, and
yeah.
You can say it again and then again.
Yeah, and he does have the influence of grandparents and people who will say, you know, Robert, come on, it's just we're going to the movies, let's get you some candy, and I have to tell them, you know, don't pressure him.
Okay.
Because it doesn't feel good.
Yeah. So was it hard to say no when people are kind of giving you a little pressure?
Yeah.
So you had to even be extra, extra tough?
Yeah.
Wow. That's very exciting. Okay, well, we have a couple other questions here from people in the room. Do you feel better? Do you feel better without all that stuff in you?
Yeah.
Okay. What's different?
I feel that I have more energy.
Yeah?
That's really all.
Oh, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you get to take all that energy and go outside and play?
Yeah.
And get all dirty?
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're going to go to a commercial here. This is Trudy Pratt. Don't go away. We have more.
Kicking down for fun and feeling groovy.
Welcome back. Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. You're listening to Positively Healthy here on KCNR 1460, and we are going to talk dirt. So this part of the show, we're moving on. We're talking to Ken Warenius. And Ken, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Good. We had a great start with our 7-year-old. Was that inspiring?
Isn't that kid great or what?
I know.
Yeah.
I loved it. Gosh. Well, hey, you know, in talking to you before the show, you have so much to teach people. And, I mean, when we went over our topics, there were about 2 weeks worth. And so, you know, we can see here that let's start with what it is that you sell at the farmer's market, just
what I do,
yeah.
What I do is I sell worms,
okay.
Worm castings,
yeah.
Actively aerated compost tea, and I also have a microscope where I test other people's tea to see if it has a bacterial or a fungi dominance.
Okay.
And that's basically what I do. I'm there every Saturday starting April.
Okay, and you have 4 things that primarily you do. So if somebody wants to buy worm castings, because we've all been told that that's a super nutritious something to feed your plants.
Absolutely. Okay. It has lots of microbes.
Okay. Are we talking about this like a 50-pound bag? Are we talking about a baggie?
No,
like,
I generally sell 5-gallon buckets for $20 a bucket.
Okay.
Or we sell up to cubic yards at a time, too.
I see.
Yeah, whatever, you know, people want, we can supply.
Okay. Well, let's go through, you know, we have this shift that people are making where maybe
yes.
They have gone from just having a lawn. And
well,
they're thinking maybe they should plant some vegetables in there since the automatic sprinklers are coming on.
Yeah, there's a big drive for a lot of people getting rid of the lawns and putting in gardens.
Yeah.
And more people learning that we can get away from the chemicals.
Okay.
And the pesticides, the herbicides, and we can start using organic ways to solve all our gardening problems. I think it's really important that we follow up and learn about that.
So what would the first step be for someone who is just making that shift?
One of the first things I would suggest is learn about the soil food web. And the soil food web is a complex matrix of all the living entities in the soil. And one of the best ways to learn about that is buy a book called Teeming with Microbes by Jeff Lowenfeld. That book will explain many, many, many things about what's going on in the soil. Things that we just take for granted. It'll explain the biology, the fungi, the bacteria, the protozoa, nematodes. Out there in Radioland, people probably don't even know. In one teaspoon, just one little teaspoon of good soil, you can have up to a billion bacteria. You'll have several yards of fungi hypha. You'll have 40 to 60,000 protozoa that will eat the bacteria and the fungi. And then you have nematodes and all these other little micropods and macropods. All these living entities in
the
soil. It's alive. And it will create all the nutrients for the plants. And that's the way Mother Nature meant it to be done.
And then in any basic yard in Reading, what is the soil like probably? I mean, it's been, what, petrochemical fertilizers?
Many has. And it's some soils will respond quite quickly if you reintroduce, you know, biology and stuff. Some, you know, where the soil has had chemicals put on it for years and years, it takes time to recover. But it will. Mother Nature takes its time, but it's very, very powerful.
Okay, so let's say someone is going to carve out a little section of area that was lawn, and they're going to try to get it healthy, get the soil healthy. How are they going to do that?
One of the best things they can do is add organic materials, compost. Compost is the word of the day.
Okay.
And we're talking aerobic compost, stuff that has lots and lots of air, hasn't gotten too hot, hasn't gotten over 160 to kill all the microbes. It's been turned so there's a lot of air in there. And we want aerobic microbes, not anaerobic. Your aerobic microbes will create good stuff, whereas your anaerobic microbes will create phenols, formaldehyde, alcohols, and other things that are toxic to the plants and the soil. So always think aerobic, aerobic, aerobic.
Okay, so now do you have a way, like right now I'm kind of being the person who's thinking, let's plant a small garden. Okay, the first thing, do they start by just adding compost and starting to make their own compost, or do they need to all measure their soil and first?
Yes. I encourage everybody to make their own compost.
Okay.
You cannot buy compost as good as what you can make if you make it right. And that is full of microbes, and all those microbes will sequester the elements that the plants need. Because what happens is the bacteria and the fungi, they sequester stuff from the air and the soil and the water, all these elements. And they have all these elements inside their bodies. And then along comes these protozoa. They eat the bacteria and the fungi, and all those nutrients, elements are in the protozoa. Then what they excrete or what's left when they die are nutrients in a chelated form that the plants can readily take up. This is a symbiotic relationship that started millions of years ago and is up to us as humans to continue it instead of trying to kill all these microbes with all the pesticides and bad stuff.
Okay. So if I'm going to start a compost pile, what I've learned from you right now is I can't just go right out and throw my banana peels, et cetera, into the dirt and every now and then add some leaves. I need a thermometer.
Well, that's...
Is that all I need, or do I need...
You can throw everything out there.
Okay.
Okay, there's three kinds of compost. There's static compost, which most people make where they don't turn it and it gets too hot or doesn't get hot enough and so forth. There's thermolytic compost. That's where we heat it up and make really good aerobic compost. And then there's vermicompost. Vermicompost is with worms. And you can have a worm farm where you feed all the kitchen scraps from you know, the kitchen table to your worms. And all that is great nutrients for your plants.
Now, is that just more highly concentrated, like the worm castings? Is that what you do once you already have pretty good compost? I mean, you have good-looking, rich-looking, and feeling and testing soil, and then you're just you're topping it off with the worm castings?
Yes,
okay.
Yes. Always add organic material and worm castings, if you can, to your soil.
Okay.
And
if you're starting from no place, probably not the worm castings, or...
You should never have more than 15-20% of your total soil content worm castings.
Okay, there we go.
They're too fine, and they will prohibit oxygen from getting into your soil. You're
okay.
dealing with three things when you're dealing with soil. The physics, the chemistry, and the biology.
Okay.
And the biology is all the little bugs. The physics is the structure of the soil. You know, how much air can get to it. Big rocks, little rocks, clay, sand, so forth. And then the chemistry. The chemistry deals with the cation exchange capacity, which is, you know, with the ion exchange and everything. Most of us, if we just deal with the compost and the biology,
mm-hmm.
that will take care of most of everything else. So it's important to get a lot of biology in there and food for the biology, for the microbes. And that's where the compost comes in.
Okay, so then right now it's February. What can the gardener do?
Get started today. Get started two.
Stay up all night tonight?
Well, for the fanatics like me, maybe.
Okay.
as soon as you harvest last year's garden, you immediately want to add nutrients to it, you know, your bone meal, blood meal. There's a million of them out there. And this would be a good time to bring up to encourage people to go to either all the hydroponic stores in town.
Okay.
They offer us an incredible amount of organic stuff that normally you just could not get here in town.
Okay, let me cut in with this because now you were talking to me before the show about having your soil tested so you know what it's high in and what it's low in. And
right.
I'm guessing all those different special nutrients at the hydroponic store, you're using them once you know what you're trying to augment, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
If at all possible, get your soil tested. One test is worth 1,000 guesses.
Okay.
And so I encourage you, everybody to do that. Go down Chico, you can get it tested, you know. So,
Jim,
yes.
Have you had your soil tested?
Actually, I haven't, but I'm encouraged to go home and turn my compost piles.
Okay.
Because I haven't done that in a while.
So
no,
that takes
we compost a lot.
And
I love, you know, putting all that, you know, the grass clippings and everything else back to work in the garden. It's great stuff.
So we're talking a pitchfork here.
Yes, a nice sharp one.
Okay, sharp pitchfork.
Makes
okay.
it easier.
So if Jim is wondering about his soil right now, he can take a little bit of soil down to Chico,
mm-hmm.
and for somewhere between $50 to $100, he can learn what?
He can learn all the NPK along with all the micronutrients, your iron, your calcium, magnesium, all these other.
Everything
can
is
learn
high in.
What all is in there, if it's high or if it's low.
Okay.
And also he'll learn cation exchange capacity. Cation exchange capacity, it deals with the chemistry of the soil, and that has to do with the ion exchange. It's like if you have real small cation exchange capacity, you could have all the elements there, but you're feeding your plants in real small plates and with little teeny forks. You need high cation capacity, and that will encourage nutrient uptake.
Okay, so you have this profile that you have from the Chico people, and
yes.
then that's where you probably would consult with you and say, hey, Ken, you know, what do I do here? It's really low in these four nutrients, and
right.
then you can recommend blood meal, bone meal, kelp,
all these different elements that would help replace whatever's lacking.
Okay.
You know, sulfur, whatever.
I have a question. So are certain nutrients better for certain types of plants? In other words, if you're planting tomatoes, would that be different soil requirements, different nutrients than, let's
yes.
say,
yeah, but
else?
But another thing we really want to consider is if you're growing annuals, like tomatoes, you want a high bacteria ratio in your soil. Whereas if you're growing perennials, you know, like rose bushes or fruit trees, mm-hmm. then you want a higher fungi count. And you can push that either way by what you feed your plants. A higher carbon will feed more fungi, which would be better for your perennials. Whereas if you're feeding your annuals, like your tomato plant, mm-hmm. you want more bacteria. You might throw a little a molasses in there for one thing. And a little molasses will feed the bacteria. And the more they feed, the more of them there will be, and the more nutrient exchange capacity you have.
So what all is at a hydroponic store that is helpful to the organic gardener?
Well, they have a wide variety of different things. You know, there's four main stores that I know of in town.
And where are they?
Well, there's Northern Roots down in south of town.
Okay,
Bare Roots on Cypress. They have a great selection. There's a new store opened up on 44 and Airport Road, hydroponic store up there. They're very willing to help you get whatever you need. And there's a new one over here on Park Marina, Humboldt Hydroponics, and they have a great selection of all kinds of good stuff.
Okay, well, when we come back from this break, we're going to talk about how to fix your soil and what exactly you can add to it. This is Dr. Trudy Pratt. We're talking Positively Healthy on Saturday. We'll be right back. This is Dr. Trudy Pratt, and you're listening to Positively Healthy here on KCNR 1460. Okay, in the studio we have Ken Warenius. And Ken, let's give the folks out in listening land your information so in case they want to get in contact with you.
Yes, yes. One of the best things they can do is go to readingcomposttea.com. And my number is 243-2836.
And they can shoot you an email through your website.
They can shoot me an email, I'll gladly, or a phone call. I'm available anytime. And give me a call. I love talking about the soil and how to make it better.
And then the farmer's market starts in April?
Yes, I believe it'll probably be second week in April, maybe, right about there. And I encourage everybody, come on down. And I have worm casting tea, and I can do evaluations for your tea.
Oh, that's exciting. Okay, and you're there through what? Thanksgiving, basically, right?
I usually stay until about October. It gets kind of cold out there about then.
Do you peter out?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So if you want Ken's advice, you've got to get there before it's raining.
Yeah.
So, okay. So let's go back to the soil here, and let's figure out what, like, when we see the hydroponic store, what's in there that's better than, like, higher quality stuff that you don't have to mail order? You can get it right here in Reading.
They have a wide variety of organic materials, just tremendous selection, plethora of it. And I encourage everybody to just go on in there and see what they have.
Okay.
They got some great stuff.
Okay, so we have our feedback. We have from our lab in Chico. We have, I'm kind of walking people through this. We
have
all of the, they can talk to you. You can tell them, go a little bit up on this. Now, what do you do when there's just like way too much of something in the soil? Let's say you've got high cadmium or something you think, ooh, that doesn't really sound good for you.
That's a really good question. If we have toxic stuff in our soil, the microbes, given time, will get rid of it. They change the form of what it is. They'll volatilize it off. There's a lot of different things that they will do to it. But given time, the microbes will take care of that problem.
Okay. And then the other thing we've learned from you is that if you want to be kind of a more slouchy with your composting, you really are creating an anaerobic compost pile.
Yes,
it's all just sitting there and crunching itself. It needs air.
Air. Yeah, once again, we're talking anaerobic versus aerobic. Anaerobic compost is where we just kind of let it sit there. We don't turn it. We don't pay attention to what's in it, the carbon-nitrogen ratio. We don't pay attention to the temperature. That will create anaerobic microbes. Your anaerobic microbes are bad because they will create phenols, alcohol, formaldehyde, and other toxins that are not good for your plant. That's why we always want to think aerobic, aerobic, aerobic. All your good microbes are in the top foot of the soil, and all your bad microbes are deeper and deeper.
Okay. So now we've got our compost that we're making, and according to you, good compost, you can't buy compost as good as you can make it.
There's only one place that I found in Northern California called the Earthworm Soil Factory down in Durham, California. They make a very good quality product.
Okay, and then about 15% of that can be your worm casting.
15% of your gross dirt should be worm castings. Generally, in the soil, when you look at your soil, what you want 25% should be air, 25% should be water, 40% should be minerals, you know, all your basically dirt, and 10% should be organic material, or even more than 10% if possible.
Okay, organic material is what? Your
compost? Your compost.
Oh, okay.
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 Any organic stuff that's dying.
Okay, so to me that almost sounds like we could pull this off. I mean, this sounds almost
absolutely
easy.
Anybody can do it.
Okay.
Yeah. Back before 1920, before we had chemicals, every 14-year-old boy knew how to make good quality compost. Today we ask a 14-year-old boy about compost and you go, ooh, poop, I don't want to touch it. But it's so simple, anybody can do it. It's just a matter of some basic rules, which gives me an opportunity to bring up a thing. On the 19th and 20th, I will be giving lectures at the college and at the Arboretum. You can check on Saturday's paper, get the exact times and places. And I give two-hour lectures on the soil and how to make it better.
Okay. So okay. Say that again.
On the 19th and 20th.
Okay.
At the Arboretum.
What time?
They're going to have to check
the
page. No, one's at 9 in the morning and one's at 1 in the afternoon. But just check Saturday's paper in the garden section, and they'll have a listing of when it's going to be.
Okay, that's good. Now let's go back and talk about the soil of Reading. Like there's kind of the West Reading soil.
Yes,
and then
we
there
have
are
west,
people
north,
thinking they
south.
Can't grow something because of clay.
Right,
and they're wrong, right?
Well, clay is really a good substance to start with because it has a very high cation exchange capacity, which means ions go back and forth a lot. Whereas if you have sand or other, you know, rock, then that doesn't happen. The best thing to do if you have clay soil, add copious quantities of organic material, lots and lots of compost.
Okay, so that
same with almost all soils will benefit from more and more compost.
Okay, well, we're going to go to break here, and you're listening to Positively Healthy KCNR 1460. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back. Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt, and you're listening to Positively Healthy here on KCNR 1460. And in the studio, we have Ken Warenius. And Ken, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
Gosh,
I'm having a great time.
It's nice to have you here. You know, this is the time to talk about dirt and a time to get everybody inspired if they were thinking of sitting this year out. And, you know, with the weather we've had, it's hard to not think about your yard right now. There's just no excuse. It's just too dreamy.
I see more and more people out there thinking about getting that garden going.
Yeah. So, hey, let's go. You know, we still have a couple of things that are really important that we need to cover here. And one is your true compost tea. And another really are the ins and the outs of these worms. And so, you know, let's start with the tea.
Okay. Actively aerated compost tea. Let's just for a second say what it is not. It is not what grandma and grandpa used to make where they put a bunch of manure inside a bucket and let it sit there for a week or two.
Because I already thought that's what it was.
No.
Okay.
Actively aerated compost is where you have a high-quality compost or worm castings, and you put some of that inside dechlorinated water, because the chlorine would kill the microbes.
Okay.
And then you add some activators like molasses, fish hydrosolate, some sea kelp, molasses, and you put that in. That's food for the microbes. And then you aerate it. You aerate it very well. You want to aerate it with at least 2 liters per gallon per minute. And that's how much air you want to be going through.
Okay, how do you get that air in there?
With a really strong air pump, and a really good aquarium pump will do it if it's strong enough.
Okay, but you do it. And then we get to buy it from you.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay,
I sell it for the people that don't want to go through the trouble of making it.
Yeah.
But it's a very simple thing to make, and everybody can make it. And it's the quickest, cheapest, easiest way to put life back into your soil.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Fascinating. Okay, so take us through how much of that you need for your garden.
Okay, I'm gonna go over real quick with a 5-gallon bucket on how to do it. You take a 5-gallon bucket. You fill it up with 4 gallons of water, let it sit out overnight and aerate it so all the chlorine flashes off. You put in 4 cups of good quality compost and worm castings, 1 tablespoon of molasses, 2 tablespoons of fish hydrosolate, and 1 tablespoon of sea kelp. That's it, those 4 things.
Wow.
Or 3 things. And then you aerate it really, really well for 24 to 48 hours, and then just pour that on your plants. And what you've done, you've taken the microbes that were inside the compost, and you've created conditions and environment to where they will multiply by copious quantities. And you turn from thousands into billions. And that's what you want to do, because all those little microbes will create an environment for the plant to take up nutrients.
Now, you have your 5-gallon bucket,
yes,
right? Okay.
Yes.
How do you pour that on? How liberally are you pouring that on?
You can just pour straight out of the bucket. 5 gallons of good tea on just flat grass area will cover an acre. So that's quite a bit.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's powerful stuff. And what's really nice about it, you can put a whole 5 gallons on one plant, and it's not going to hurt it one bit. You cannot burn anything with this stuff. So, you know, as long as you make properly, you don't want to make it improperly, because if you do it improperly, once again, we go back to anaerobic conditions, and they create the bad stuff. So if you're going to make compost tea, make sure you make it right.
Okay.
Powerful, powerful stuff.
Now, can you use this on other plants? Like, can you put it on your lawn?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, once again, we go back to the bacteria and the fungi-dominated stuff. If you're growing your annuals, you grow a tea that is bacteria-dominated, and you do that by feeding activators, your molasses and stuff, that will feed bacteria. Whereas if you're going to do your rose bushes or a vineyard or something, then you want more of a fungi tea, and you can do that by eliminating certain activators and introducing others.
Okay.
That feed the microbes that will, you know, suit the situation.
So this, okay, we can buy this from you, or if we have an aquarium pump, we can make it.
Yes. What I would encourage people to do, go to Google, type in actively aerated compost tea, and click on videos. There'll be 150 different videos teaching you how to make this stuff. It's simple.
Wow. Okay.
Or if you want, come buy it from me. I always like that, too.
It's starting to sound easier just knowing you. Yeah. Okay. So, now, what about the worms? I know people are just wanting to know. Anybody under 15 is probably so excited that maybe there will be worms in their house.
Yes, so. Yes. Worms are wonderful. And worms, one of the best things about worms in your garden is that they create little tunnels so air can get down in there. The second best thing about worms is their castings have copious quantities of microbes, your bacteria and your fungi, and those are the things that create the nutrients for your plant. So those are the two main reasons we want worms. Now, there's different kinds of worms. There's somewhere between 4,000 to 8,000 different kinds of worms, depending on what kind of book you read and who you talk to. The main kind of worms we want are surface worms. They're called Encinia foetida. I'll say that again, Encinia foetida. And those are the kind of worms that generally reside in the top 4 to 6 inches of your soil. And they bring all the nutrients sideways, and they make all the holes sideways. Whereas if you're dealing with night crawlers, you know, your bigger worms, they have a hole, they go up and down, and they'll have a little nest, you know, up to 10 feet down sometimes. And they'll bring all your nutrients that are way deep up to the surface. And they go up and down, whereas your surface worms go back and forth. And now talking about Encinia foetida, those are the kind of worms I sell. And generally you buy about a pound at a time, which is about $20 to $30, depending on where you buy them. And
these are not endemic in our soil now? They're there now or they aren't there now?
There are.
Just very, very few.
But it depends. If you have really good quality soil with lots of organic material in there, they'll have a lot more worms. Whereas if you're dealing with just dirt and no organic material, you'll be really rare on the worms for sure.
And for those who don't know, what are castings?
Oh, worm poop.
There you go. All right. Isn't that better than castings?
Yeah. They're small little guys, and I follow the worms with a little microscope and a little tweezers and pick. No, I don't do that.
It's getting weird in here.
No, we separate the worms through a great big trommel, and it's a big thing goes round and round, and the worms come out, and then the casting is separated from that.
Okay.
And that's the way we do it.
And now they are only one season? They're around for one season?
No. Okay. Worms will last for several years.
Okay.
And they will double every, you know, if conditions are right, they will double every 2 months. So if you buy 1,000 worms in 2 months, conditions right, they'll have 4,000 and so forth and so on, 4, 8, 16, 32, and so forth.
Okay, and how much
every
are,
2 months.
How much are worms, are they?
Right now, they're $20, but starting April, they'll be up to 22 to 25. I'm not sure yet.
Okay, I'm and sure. then that
Inflation.
Lasts...
Oh, okay.
Did we hear that question?
Yeah, why isn't the world overrun with worms? Well, first of all, real interesting fact here. During the Ice Age in North America, almost all the worms were eliminated. Yeah, people find that hard to believe, but there were just a few select sites that worms were still left. Virtually almost all the worms that we see and have today in our soil are descendants of worms that came from Europe. Yeah, most people think we've always had them, and we did, but they died during the Ice Age, and almost all the worms we have today come from Europe. And the reason we don't have overrun with worms is things kill them. They die. Environmental conditions, you know, will kill them and so forth.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, we're going to take a quick break here. But you're listening to Positively Healthy on KCNR 1460.
Today, most people...
Welcome back. Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt, and you're listening to our show Positively Healthy, and whoa, are we learning a lot about gardening today. Gardening as in the dirt, the soil below the plant. which obviously is where it all happens. So welcome back, Ken.
Thank you.
We have Ken Morenius here, and he is at the Farmer's Market every Saturday here when it starts. And if you have been inspired by something you've heard today and you don't want to go to ReadingCompostTea.com and find him there, you can always swing over and talk to him here. Okay. And we're talking about worm castings right now. And I've learned from you that there are a lot of ways you can do this whole worm thing. Now,
yes.
One way I remember people getting excited about worms was really they were under their sink.
Yes.
And they were kept as pets.
Yes.
Okay.
I know several little old ladies that keep worms in their kitchen,
okay,
in their pantry, or under their sink. I've met a little old lady that hangs up a pair of Levi's with suspenders from the ceiling, and she ties knots around the pants of the legs, and she actually raises her worms inside the Levi's. And when she wants castings, she unties one of the legs of the pants, shakes some castings out into a bucket, ties it back up, and that's her worm farm. And she feeds everything through the top. I also saw a really nice set the other day where a lady had a beautiful redwood cabinet, and it was right in her kitchen. You open it up, and there's nothing but a ton of worms in there. If you do it right, they don't smell. They smell very nice. And there's a lot of different ways to do it. You can have a flow-through worm system. You can have a system where you separate the worms by feeding on one side and then harvesting the other side. Another way to harvest the worms is take your whole worm bed, put it on top of a piece of plastic in the sun, make it like a pile, and slowly slough all the material off the sides, and eventually you just end up with a handful of worms in the middle because they keep going towards the center.
Wow. Okay, yeah. That's complex. Now, I remember that people I knew, I thought they had just like a plastic container with a lid on it.
Sure,
okay.
Sure.
It had some worms in it, and they would throw their cantaloupe rinds and potato skins to the worms, and mm-hmm. every now and then they'd take half of them and put them outside in the garden and take a bunch of the castings with them, and then they just kind of reduce the population.
That's a great way to do it.
Okay.
That's
it was pretty low-tech, yeah.
Low-tech, simple, but sometimes that's the best way to do it.
Okay, now, if someone wants to do that, I mean, I'm thinking sort of like kid projects.
Oh, okay.
That just seems like that would be fun.
It's a lot of fun. Another thing you can
but
do...
But out of the way, you know, it's...
You can do it under your sink, or you can just take a great big, like an 8 to 10-inch diameter pipe, about 3 foot long, and bury that up and down inside your garden. Put a few holes around the bottom, and just put all your food inside that pipe. Put a bucket over it so the rain don't fall in. And the worms will crawl in, and the worms will crawl out, and they'll eat all that food. You have 3 or 4 of these pipes in your garden, kind of move them around in different areas. That's called a worm tower. That's a great way to go. Absolutely.
Well, what do you think about that, Jim?
I think that's a great idea. I'm not writing all these down, but I'm getting so many great ideas. I'm going to have to go back and listen to the archive show. And,
I know, because you're such an avid gardener.
Oh, yeah, my wife and I love the garden. And we have lots of worms because we compost a lot, and our soil over the years has built up really well. So I love good soil. I mean, I love when I go to plant. My wife is more of the picker. I'm the planter. I'm the guy who's out there with the seeds and digging holes and planting things, and I love that part.
Well, I love this idea of, you know, basically having your food residue just, you know, right there
straight
in the pipe.
The garden.
Yeah,
yeah,
right in
fine.
The garden.
Yeah. And as long as you put, some mosquito netting over the top so, you know, flies and stuff don't get in.
Yeah.
And then a bucket over that so the rain don't get in. Then you've got your own little worm bin right there in your garden.
Oh, good.
And you can, you know, have 3 or 4 of those and move them around different areas every couple of months.
Huh.
The worms will find the food. They're very good at that.
How did you get interested in worms?
Oh, my. I started raising worms about 20 years ago on and off. And I'd play with them for a while. Then the moles would get in. Oh, boy, those moles. You want to beat them up sometime. And they get in, eat the moles. You know, one mole can eat almost 40 to 50,000 worms in 1 year.
Oh, my.
That's a lot of worms, you know. And moles multiply. Anyway, mole problems, that's another issue for another radio show. But I got into it, and then about what actually happened about 4 years ago, I was down in Santa Rosa, and I was walking through a vineyard. A friend of mine, Evan, has a big vineyard down there. And we went to a corner, and this area was astounding. It was just beautiful. It was overgrown. It was just beautiful. And I go, Evan, how come this is so good? And he says, well, you see this little guy over here lives in this little shack. He's been given this area, this stuff called compost tea. And I went, what's that? So I came home, I started going online, I started learning, and I started applying the techniques that are necessary for good organic farming, and my garden just went crazy, and I started seeing more people doing that, and I went, well, this is the way to go. I've been gardening for almost 40 years, and I've never had the results that I did when I really applied the principles of good organic farming. And the best thing is we get away from the pesticides, the herbicides, all the bad stuff. We have to stop killing all the microbes because they make our soil and our food healthy.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of healthy food,
yes.
You know, in my practice, we used to have a Brix meter, and a Brix meter was measuring the minerals, the sugars, you know, to see if food was ripe, and it would put out a number for us. So we could know by measuring just a couple of drops of juice from a fruit or a vegetable. Exactly, we could have this fabulous number of vitality. And so, you know, if something rated down by a 6, it had a low reading, or if it was up around 20, it was, you know, pretty darn good food. And so over the years, I don't really know where it went. You know, it kind of got lost. And I ordered one this morning. And so, you know, it's something that I want the people in my practice to start getting in the habit of doing again, of rating their fruits and vegetables. So if they're buying something at a market and maybe it's really old, it wasn't vine ripened, or the nutrients weren't in the soil, they get an immediate indicator that it's sort of lower on the totem pole of health. And so you've played around with this a little bit.
Yes, a little bit. What you're talking about is a reflectometer.
Yeah.
And it actually what it measures is totally dissolved solids. But that's also an indication of the sugar content. And the higher the sugar content, the better it's going to taste. And I can't wait until people like you and other people get reflectometers, start going to the markets, and start testing, you know, the food. And say, hey, this guy is good, but this guy over here is better. And that's, you know, putting the power into the hands of the people, and that's what we have to do. We have to get away from all the pesticides and everything and get healthier food.
Well, it seems as a consumer, you know, we're at a place where we really have to have those nutrients back in the soil. And when we see people as committed as you, trying to get the nutrients in the soil through all this vitality, all this technique, which is not as complicated as it sounds at first. When you break it down for us, it seems very doable. But ultimately, I know that we're going to want printouts of actual being able to see what someone's soil looks like. And so, you know, I just know that's where it's headed, because I can see it happening in other towns, and I know it's something that's going to start happening here, where people are going to want to know, okay, how much calcium really is in your soil? And so, which means it's going to be in the food, and then you can use your Brix meter to figure out, you know, get your Brix rating. And so, so I want people to have your contact information again.
ReadingCompostTea.com.
Okay, and your February show?
The 19th and the 20th.
Okay.
Either at the Arboretum or the college. Check out Saturday's garden section in the Record Searchlight.
Okay, and are they the same exact class?
Yes.
Okay, so if they miss one, they can go to the other?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. All right, so, you know, thanks for coming on
today.
I know it goes by so fast, and I always want it to last a whole lot longer. Next week we're having on food, what would we say? Website owner Hank Shaw will be on with Ryan Sabalo from the Record Searchlight, and we're going to talk about shooting your food and then cooking it up. And there's just sort of a new movement out there of people who are hunting for their own food and making fabulous gourmet dishes. So don't miss next week. You've been listening to Positively Healthy on KCNR 1460.